Taxation number 22345, Reel 4.
Freddie Andrews, Reel 4.
So we got them on a rollout, and needless to say, the first one was on the list was the company commander. Oh, he's up a brigade, he'll be having one, but so he can't have his because we better have his. And so it went on, and anybody didn't come, we had them. So we had quite a bit of a party there that night. But we're still talking about the Ardennes, and if you look at the statistics of the whole campaign, the 43rd Div wasn't in the Ardennes. Well, technically, we weren't, apparently, because on reading it up, we were holding positions. But it was still our lot to liaise with the Yanks who thought they were home for Christmas. And I went forward there, and I went up saying they're equivalent to us. And I say they just thought they were there for Christmas, and they were all half tight. Was by drinking industrial methylated spirits and with their cordials. But again, although we weren't actually supporting any fighting units there, we go on all the time, and then you get the people coming in with blisters and stiff necks and that sort of thing, all the minor things. And then that's after that. And, so they were heading for the Rhine. I'm sure I'm missing out a lot of things here, but we're heading for the salt crossing the Rhine. my little section, we were in a little farm in the forest, and that was weeks and weeks where the signals were laying down their cables, and the whole thing was covered in smoke and that sort of thing. And, we were told that there's no way we're going to take 3-ton lorries and that over there, so we were given a couple of Bren carriers, and we had to get all our essentials onto the Bren carrier. And and ultimately we went across.
What was it like crossing?
Calm. it didn't have any problems, really. It was a bit of a surprise, and we were under smoke and that sort of thing. So we went across and set up on the other side as usual. And then, of course, there was a lot of scrap on the other side, which again we supported medically. Then,
any incidents you can remember about handling those wounded?
Yeah, the ones I'm coming to is handling the wounded, including me. We were at a place called Gangelt in Germany. There was a big tank battle there, and the air tanks were brewing up, and trying to get an injured bloke out of a burning tank is a bit of a problem, to say the least. But anyway, at one stage, I was taking my section up. I was on the bike again in front, and going out to take up a position at a pre-arranged spot, wherever it was. And I don't remember whether I got blown off, or I heard a mortar or a shell coming to my right, and either I got blown off, or I automatically turned away and hit a 3-tonner going in the opposite direction, which cracked me head. I had a couple of toothache and 3 or 4 broken ribs. So I was put in one of my own ambulances, which is a bit different. Taken back to our HQ, and they said, "Oh, it's Andy here, and he's had it, you know." They gave me a shot of morphine and thought they'd never see us again. And not that I was going to die, but I went on an ambulance train, which wasn't very good, back to Brussels. So I was put in hospital in Brussels, on about a third or fourth floor, and it was a time when they were sending doodlebugs over, which didn't make it very pleasant because we were used to digging in, and one couldn't dig in a bit. Anyway, because I was a medic, as I got better, I was giving them a hand on the ward. And as I was able to walk about reasonably well, we used to be able to go out in the afternoon in hospital blues, which was a bright blue uniform, white shirt and a red tie. And I used to go out there, and then because I helped to make, they managed to get my uniform back in. And in the evening, I could go out with our MCA as staff. Now, prior to this, there had been from Holland, I think it was, 48 hours leave to Brussels.
By the way, did you ever pull men out of burning tanks?
Yeah.
At Gangeld's?
Possibly. But,
what did you do to put out the flames?
It's basically impossible to... Basically impossible to get them out, really, but you've got to try, but... Or burnt 8 tanks, and some of them weren't alight. When an armour-piercing shell went through the end of the turret, it tended to go round and round in circles, sort of thing, and may have hit somebody. Although it didn't burn, we had to get them out, but a burning tank is another proposition. Anyway, as I was saying, there was these 48 hours back to Brussels, and then ultimately I went out in the evening, but... Prior to, on this, a previous time, I'd been down on 48 to Brussels, and my great joy in life is dancing, ballroom dancing. My wife and I have been dancing since we were 16. And when we got there, back into Brussels on this 48 prior, I went to into the Montgomery Club, we had a beer, and I said, where can I dance? And they said, I said, I want ballroom dancing. And ultimately, we got dispatched. And this was an afternoon dance, or evening dance. And I danced with 2 or 3 girls, and being big-headed, they weren't up to my standard. And I went back in there. But we were just going out with the other 3, and another girl came in who looked rather nice, and I said, well, hang about a bit, and I danced with her, and we got on very well, very well. We were only on sort of orange squash, and she was on orange squash, and I was on beer or anything like that. But I enjoyed her dancing, and I taught her some steps, and we got on very well. I remembered that I'd been told, we were in billets there, and the lady who owned the billet said, I hope you're not like one of these naughty soldiers who stays there in Brussels all night and he comes back to pick up your kit. Yeah, no, well, not like that. Anyway, I remember I had to catch tram Saint-Concis at 11 o'clock or something to get back to this billet area. And about 10:30, I suppose, her name was Denise. Said, excuse me a moment, went to the phone and came back and said, would you like to come home with me? Not to sleep with me, but my parents would like a British Tommy in their house. I went back, and by that time they'd been out on the black market and bought steak and goodness knows what. So that, this is prior to that, so that, needless to say, when I got injured and was recuperating, I contacted them and they used to come and see me and vice versa, but and I still like dancing and going out for a meal, but on hospital pay, it's not conducive to really enjoying yourself, but I was able to get hold of a bottle of scotch. I was a sergeant by this time, and I could have a sergeant's rational, and I used to get a bottle of scotch or get random for give me a bottle of coffee, and that sort of thing, which I could flog to supplement my pay. So it came to the point where I was due to be released. I was fit, but which meant I would go to an RHU, a rear holding unit, and to me that wasn't on, because there was only one unit in the British Army, 1304 Ambulance. I just didn't care anyway. I knew the wardmaster, who used to be a RSM at our number one depot. And I said to him, I explained the position. I said, yeah, well, he sent me back to holding unit, but I want to get back to my own unit, 43rd Div. I said, I can go down to Brussels and pick up one of our Div trucks and get back there. Anyway, make a long story short, he said, okay, I'll give you a 24 hours start before I report you missing, which was a good start. But I went down, I had some, got some food together and that to tie me over, and went down there, and there wasn't a sign of a 43rd Div truck in the place. I thought, oh, well, they're in the muck again somewhere. And anyway, I started hitchhiking up through Holland, and a bit of Belgium and Holland, and keeping away from red caps, of course. And in the evening, I'd say, we'll drop off, I'll drop off here in the village, and went out to her house and say, can you put me up for the night? Yes, we're welcome, whether it was in, particularly in Holland. And ultimately, I kept asking, where's the 43rd? And ultimately, after about 3 or 4 days, I suppose, probably five, I got to hear where they were. And they were up in the Reichsfeld at Cleve and Goch. So ultimately, I got back and found the brigade area, and found HQ 1304 Ambulance. So, what are you doing back here? You know, thought we'd lost you forever, and want to see the colonel. Went out there, the colonel, and said, reporting back, sir. Well done. Told him how I got back and all the rest of it. And so I was on the next bit of transport going back to my company. They were digging in very flinty ground, and I thought I was fit until I started, when I picked, digging myself a hole, and my ribs weren't as good as I thought they were, but another couple of shells, and another couple of inches and that sort of thing. And we just got in there and we moved. So, where do we go from there? Got that. Well, ultimately, we did the salt crossing of Rhine, didn't we? Yeah. Ultimately, we got into Germany. It was coming up to the cessation of hostilities in Europe. And we were up towards Bremerhaven then. I remember getting a message back. Well, we got a message back. They say that a recce car had been blown up. Got in the ambulance and went up there. And it wasn't a sign of the recce car. A German had got a sea mine and put underneath the road, and a telemine on top, and just, well. So then the scrapping was still going on, and I say we were up near Bremerhaven, and listening to the radio and that sort of thing, and we ultimately got the message that it had stopped, and that Monty, as you probably know, said, I don't take my orders from the BBC. Carry on fighting until, you know. And ultimately we wrapped up, and nothing to drink to celebrate with, really, except for this old farmer who got tight on some methylate and was violently sick. But anyway, and that was all over. Ultimately, we were sent back to a little village called Hampstead, which is, I know, about 20 kilometres south of Hamburg, on the edge of the Black Forest. And we took over Augustus as a dressing station. This time it was when the soldiers used to go to their regimental MO, and he said, well, you better go back over there and put on a truck to send us over to us. And so we were a dressing station. I might add that this little village, a beautiful little village, that was 50-50 Nazis and anti-Nazis. Not that we could do much about it, because when we got there, this non-fraternisation ban was in force. You know, we weren't allowed to contact any civilian thing. We used to go over to the pub, Heidi Rickman's, and have a beer and that sort of thing. And we were running withdrawals and that sort of thing for something to do. And then,
what was the attitude of Germans towards you?
I say half were good and half were in the way. And the Nazi element obviously didn't like us. But when the fraternisation ban was lifted and we could talk to the population, and I got in with a farm family, von Weedings, who was a great guy. And they were obviously very jealous of that. In fact, the daughter with a job which I was on was acting as my interpreter. I got with him and the family, and when I finished, I used to go down there most evenings, you know, and Mum would say, hello, Freddie. Eggs, yeah. About 6 fried eggs in a frying pan, woof on the plate. And then they had pigs, and it's a slaughter of them. And Christmas, I was Santa Claus and around the village and that. But then the Gustus, because of the many people going down to Brussels and coming back, we turned it into a VD clinic. And so that's mainly what we were doing.
Was there much of that?
Yes, a lot. But an interesting thing that I've spoken to people about many occasions was that I was sergeant in charge of the thing, and of course the medical officer was there. So a bloke used to come in from one of the units and say, well, he's chipped from his MO, and he'd say, yeah. I said, what's about you? And he said, I think I've got a cold in here.
Pointing to his genitals?
Yeah. And anyway, he went in and saw the MO, and he said, yes, you've got gonorrhea or syph or whatever. And he used to come out the other side, out to me again. And that was up to me, because we had a pro forma, which obviously said name, rank and number and that sort of jazz. And it was not only part of our job to treat them, but also to try and find out where they caught it in Brussels, to get the female eliminated one way or another. I don't mean killed, but you know, off the streets. And so the pro forma went something like this: name, rank, and number. Yes. Where did what was she known? What was her name, or what was she known by? And they said, well, General Frazee Lill or something like that. And where did you meet her? In a restaurant? Yeah, yeah, it was in a restaurant so and so and so and so. And yeah. How much did she ask for intercourse? How much did you offer, and how much did you give her? And the going rate then was 3 fags, 2 fags, 1 fag. And then we used to hand this information over to not the special investigation branch, but the over there to go down and find out if they could find her.
This is in Brussels?
Hmm? Yeah, well, wherever it was, yes. It wasn't SLB, I forget what they called them. Not special investigation. And then I had a. We'd moved up to Flensburg on the Danish frontier. And we took our museum, was a thing. But on the way, I got myself another job given me. There was a ultraviolet radiant heat complex that the Germans used to put their submariners through after they'd been out in the Atlantic for a couple of months. And we took it over for our own use. So I was running that for a while. I got blinded in that.
Blinded?
Yeah.
By staring at the lamp?
Well, a bloke used to come in and, I mean, there's a big battery of these lamps, thousands of watts. And used to say, yeah, well, sort of strip off, and there were a couple of rails down the centre to keep them midships. And so just walked through there first time. And then next time he came in next day or day after, he could do two and so on. I sent this bloke in there once, and he'd just gone in there, and I was sitting at my desk, and I heard him clump. Oh, he's fallen over in there, and I didn't want to get him cooked, so I dived in there and yanked him out. And I didn't put my black glasses on. So in the evening, it was only like snow blindness, really, bleats of rods and cones, but another little thing. And then we got up to Flensburg, and say this museum place, but this time everybody was getting group happy, you know, waiting for their number to come out to come home, and it became quite difficult to keep up our jobs we had to do, which was mainly looking after hygiene wise. I suppose there's been a couple of thousand Polish displaced persons which were in camps. Some were even in Ireland, say in the Baltic. And so our numbers in the 138 Brigade, 43rd Div for that matter, were going down and down because we were early ones in, early ones out, sort of thing. And it was a job to keep it up. So we got taken over by the Leaking Boer of 30 Corps under there. We had a colonel, our colonel went, RSM went, and I was getting on very well with the colonel, and I got not made up, I was acting RSM unpaid and all that sort of thing, but just doing the duties of RSM, but no acknowledgement financially or anything else. I was still a sergeant, and he wanted me to sign on for another couple of years, and I said no. Going around these camps, I say we were looking at the hygiene side of it.
Right.
Yeah, and these DP camps mainly were surrounded by barbed wire and wooden huts and Nissen huts and that sort of thing, and we were always on about, you know, fresh air and that sort of thing, but the poles, for some reason or other, used to put conifer branches and leaves on the wall, and I assumed that there was enough oxygen coming out of those to keep the air fresh, but I used to go in there and the windows would be open, of course, and yeah, they're always open. I said, what, with condensation on them? There was another Nissan hut, and went over there with my interpreter and said, how many in here? 20 men and on and fro. What's she doing? Well, she looks after us, you know. We'll get her out of it. In addition to that, these people in these camps had nothing else to do but sex. And in fact, in one camp, we were getting one or two women a month, which a bloke had aborted them with knitting needles. So we had a bit of fun there.
What did you have to do in those cases?
Hmm?
What did you have to do in those cases?
Well, they went back in the hospital, didn't they? But, I mean, they had their own MOs there anyway. Polish MOs, but we were looking after the hygiene side. Well, whilst at Flensburg, I had a phone call from my family at Hansted to say that she, that's Ursula, the daughter, had received a message that she sent to me, which I think I've still got upstairs. Message was written by letters cut out of a newspaper, which translated said, "Now the British have left, now comes revenge."
Against whom?
Them, who were looking after the British while we were in their village. Well, whilst after the frack ban had been lifted in Hansted, again, let's start running dances. So we got ourselves a band, but it was essential we had more females to dance with than there were available in the village. So we indented on the ATS for 20 ATS to come over for the evening, which we went over and signed for, one of which was, I can't remember who it was, but it was one of the royal family, you know, Princess somebody or other, which we had a sign for and signed her back in. But we started the dances and that sort of thing, and in those days it was take your partner for a waltz, and that's why we did a waltz and so on and so forth. And at the end of the evening, we said, you know, sort of, thanks for coming, and we'll play God Save the King, haven't it? God Save the King, yeah. And stand up. And one bloke wouldn't stand up. So we got hold of him and lifted him up to his feet. And
was he a German?
Yeah, oh, yeah, German. German Nazi. And anyway, I got this message, and I said, on the phone, I said, I'll ring it's whatever his name was. And I sort of said, yeah, that's who it was. So I told the colonel, and he said, well, go down and see if we can sort him out. So again, we threw us in a jeep with, it's not Special Investigation Branch, or maybe then. We went back, and this bloke worked in Hamburg, and he came in on the bus in the evening, and I had this thing, this note in my hand about revenge, and I said to him, "You wrote that," and he said, "So what?" Or words to that effect. And he was ultimately sent for trial and got, a year and a half.
What was the charge?
I'm not sure. I didn't go. So ultimately, it was my number came up for going back home with my wife and by then two children and my business. And that was on a train with no windows and that, but we got in the right direction and went right down to Calais. And I'd stopped on a little bit longer until this replacement RSM came. And but ultimately, I came out with some of the guards.